Testing, testing. This is a recording of Albert Ames, former resident of Charlie River. So this is Jeannie Boyle. I'm here with Albert Ames, and we're going to talk about his time that he spent on the Charlie River near Circle. Albert, could you tell us a little bit about your family history and who were your parents and maybe grandparents, if you know?
My name is Albert Ames. My grandparents on my mother's side came from the Black River, and before that, from I know only through oral history, they came from the from Old Crow, which is in Canada.
What were their family names?
Henry.
Henry?
Yes, okay. My grandfather's name was Henry. My mother's maiden name was Henry.
Okay. And what about the other side of your family, your dad's side?
On my father's side of the family, they came from North Dakota. My father was adopted when he was just a young boy and grew up in South Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
At a little town called Lead. His adopted parents were gold miners who worked in the Homestake Mine, which was the only industry in that area at the time.
So he, and how did he come to Alaska? Through the mining?
No, he was working as a merchant marine aboard a ship that was traveling between Puget Sound and China.
Wow.
And I think what happened is my father got to Seward and saw Alaska and
decided he didn't want to be a merchant
marine. He didn't want to be a merchant marine no more, yeah.
I think that happens sometimes where they stay alone.
Yeah.
So he must have worked his way up into the interior.
According to just, it would have to be oral history, he went from Seward to Fairbanks, and then from Fairbanks he got a job at Woodchopper, which was another gold mining operation. I guess that was because that was the only place to get work, you know. And it seemed like he wanted to get away from civilization. It was during the build-up to the Second World War, and there was a lot of problems everywhere on the planet.
Yeah.
And my father mentioned some things that he saw over in China that, you know, he saw poor people in China, and it just kind of took the heart out of him to want to do that anymore, I guess.
Probably, yeah.
He saw the Chinese people when the cook aboard the ship emptied the garbage cans and everything out of the kitchen. The Chinese people would jump off at the dock and
try to get scraps
of food.
Yeah. The stuff that we give to our dogs is we're happy to have.
Yeah.
So he eventually met up with your mom somewhere.
Hardly anybody ever talks about it. I'm not ashamed of it either. As my father was bootlegging. He'd buy whiskey in the springtime with his trapping money, and then he would just go wherever he felt like going. And I think that they met in Fort Yukon. After that, they moved over to Chalkeetsik.
Okay.
They didn't call it Chalkeetsik back in those days. Yeah, they called it Fishhooktown, yeah. They stayed in Chalkeetsik for, I think, probably 3 or 4 years, because I know my older sister was born, and my older brother was born, and I was born.
So they had 3 kids?
All together, they had... Let's see, my older sister, my older brother, and then me, And then there was a girl child that died when she was just little, 6 or 7 months old. And then my younger brother and my younger sister and my baby brother. So there was
seven
of us all together, yeah.
Yeah. So they decided, or your father decided, to move to the Charlie River area, probably for trapping or to get away from the village? Or?
There was some discontent there on my father's part, because he wanted to be, I think he wanted to be alone and be able to just deal with life like he saw it.
Okay.
You know, and trapping wasn't really that good. It was good, but it wasn't, you know, exceptionally good, you know, where people were making lots of money, you know.
We were getting by.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
Enough to just get the food and
ice. And this was during the 40s? 40s?
Yeah, that was,
before,
yeah, early 40s, yeah. It had to be about 1939, I think, that, my parents got together. 1939, 1940. My older sister was born in 1941.
Is that Molly?
Yeah, Molly,
I did,
yeah.
Speak with her. We're going to visit her tomorrow.
Uh-huh. She'll enjoy that, yeah.
Yeah. She sounded really nice.
She's got some disabilities and but she's okay. She's strong.
Yeah. She sounded really nice on the phone.
Good.
So, do you remember how they happened to pick the Charlie River area to move to? Or was there something that was attractive over that area?
As far as I understand it, just from talking with my parents and listening to them, my father didn't hardly talk at all. I have very few memories of him even talking.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother was a storyteller.
Oh.
And according to what I was able to understand from her stories, my father made friends with an old man over at Coal Creek. Mm-hmm. I think it would be Slavin's Roadhouse now.
Right.
Slavin's Cabin, yeah.
Yeah, I've been there many times.
He made friends with an old man there named Phil Braille.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Phil Braille was helped him learn the country around there.
Mm-hmm.
I think Phil Braille at one time trapped on the Charlie River before my father did.
Yes.
I think there was some kind of agreement between my father and Phil Braille. I think some of the old cabins, they're not even there anymore. You know, you can't even find traces of them. Or, either Phil Braille or somebody before him even put them up there.
There is some mention of those cabins in some historical information that the Park Service has.
Like the guy that crashed.
Yeah, that's the
way your dad. Mm-hmm. Went to your dad's cabin.
Yeah.
They just redid that story in Fairbanks paper recently, about a month ago. About the Air Force plane that crashed in the Charlie River area.
Yeah, I think I had that on tape, or on a CD. The historian from National Park Service gave it to me as a tape. Yeah.
Good. So your dad met Phil Braille, and somehow your mom say they went by dog team over to the Circle area and then up to Yukon? There used to be trails all over, I know.
Sure. In the wintertime, they would go everywhere.
Yeah.
But when my parents moved from Chalkeetsuk, they moved by boat.
By boat. It was a summertime.
Yeah. My father had a fairly good-sized rubber boat with an inboard, just a little tiny. Crank them over, you know.
Wow.
Okay.
They cutted along in those in the old days, though.
Yeah, what?
They cutted along in those old boulders in the old days.
Yeah, I talked to some of the old people, and They said, boy, that boat was fast.
Yeah.
Unless you were going up river sitting in it.
Yeah.
So then he moved up to Charlie River with his family, and did he build another cabin, or did he stay in Phil Brails?
Let's see, they moved up there around 1940. No, let's see, after that. It had to be 43, maybe 1944, because I was born in 1943. And I recall living there on Charlie River, but I don't recall living over in, no, I don't remember that. I was probably too young. So when we moved to Charlie River, I had to be like maybe a year, at least a year old or more. I mean, my memories are really, really vague, but I know that I recall. When we first moved there, we moved into the cabin at the mouth of Bonanza Creek. And I remember one spring we got flooded. I remember the family, everybody in the, I had to get up on top of the cabin because it was
Does Bonanza Creek flow into Charlie River?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wonder how many miles from the mouth is that? Quite a ways or not too far?
Oh, it's probably within 20 miles.
Okay.
But on the river, that could be a long way.
Yeah. We were up at the Charlie River this summer. In June or July, early July. But there was a big flood going on from the 40-mile river, so the water was really high on the Yukon, and we had to get back and rescue the fish wheel. So we stayed a couple of days. Hopefully we'll go back next summer.
Uh-huh.
Maybe get a little further up there.
Yeah, we're...
The Bonanza Creek...
We're looking for your dad's cabin. That's not too far up, right? From the mouth.
Yeah, the first cabin that we lived in after it flooded, my father built another cabin down close to the mouth of the river. I think some of those people up that way still use it. I know, you remember Albert, Charlie Kidd?
Yep, Charlie Kidd and Albert Carroll goes up there fishing.
Charlie Kidd and then I think Doug Gill.
Yeah.
I think he still uses it occasionally when he's doing
right. Yeah.
Alias. He has an alias. Oh. We won't go into that.
Oh, Asplund, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you're a crook Heidi, huh?
Yeah. He didn't tell anybody that for about 15 years after he came to Circle. He didn't tell he was a Heidi crook. But anyway, so your dad built another cabin down at the mouth, and is that where you mainly live then?
Yeah, we lived at the mouth of the river for a while.
It's so beautiful there.
Yeah, it is,
really.
Probably in the first, that's Connie and Ben.
Yeah.
Polly.
Yeah, I think Polly uses that cabin when he goes up hunting too. So how many years do you think you guys lived there toward the mouth?
I think on the mouth of the river we probably lived down there for either 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. Because I don't recall living in the Bonanza Creek cabin very long. I think we only lived up there for maybe a year. And after it flooded, then it was my baby sister died there too, so that was kind of...
Bad memories.
Yeah, it was bad memories for my mother, and I think my father decided to build a new house partly because of that.
Yeah.
And because the place was
kind of bad luck.
Yeah, depressing too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably for both of them.
So was your baby sister buried at the old cabin area? Bonanza Creek.
Yeah. That's one of the main issues that I'm interested in trying to get, bring some attention to, with the National Park Service, is that, yes, it's also a family graveyard,
Yeah, we got to make sure that's understood. Someday it would be really nice if you'd come up and we'd take you up to Charles River. We'd like to do that someday, just so you can, check it out for yourself.
Uh-huh.
when you're feeling well enough, you know, in the summer, if you could come up, we could take you up. We could spend a week up there and camp out and fish for grayling and
yeah.
around.
Hunt for ducks, whatever, yeah.
Yeah. Nice. So, after they moved to the cabin, were you children getting any kind of education now, or were your mom teaching you on your own, or your dad, or you're just getting the traditional?
Yeah, just tradition, yeah.
I know they didn't have correspondence schools in those days, but you know, sometimes parents had books that they taught their kids.
No, more of what we were learning is just tradition things, you know.
But
we did learn, you know, like the rudiments of arithmetic, you know. We didn't start learning to read, though, because that just wasn't part of what tradition was, you know.
And in those years, people had to make enough, gather enough food to keep their kids healthy, to feed them. That was the main, seems like that was the main thing that they had to do every day, was make sure they were stockpiling the food for winter.
Yeah, plus they were commercial fishing too for, you know, they did a lot, they dried a lot of salmon for the store. You know, they'd take that to the store and trade it too.
Was that to the store in Circle or Slavin?
Either Eagle or Circle, one of the two, whichever one, you know, you decided to go to, yeah.
Yeah.
Right
in
between there.
Yeah,
middle.
Kind of in the middle, huh?
Right.
So your father traded in Eagle and Circle?
Yes.
And got what he needed through selling fish and furs, probably, and whatever else they could gather up, and people wanted to buy, I suppose. I had a story from my sister-in-law, Anna John, who told me there was a guy that lived below Slavin's cabin, and he took care of all the dog mushers, all the mushers' dogs in the summertime. And he'd have like 300 or 400 dogs there. I can't remember if it was McGregor or somebody else, but he said he was down below Slavin's cabin about maybe 5 to 10 miles. And the miners, all the guys that would go mining, had dog teams and they'd just drop them off. Mm-hmm. And this guy would fish in the summer and feed everybody's dogs. And at the end of the summer, they'd pay him with gold.
So,
that's
interesting.
Yeah,
good
little system going.
Yeah, the name McGregor, I'm familiar with that name. I recall hearing that.
Yeah.
The name McGregor, but you know, it wasn't really relevant to
the roadhouse.
Yeah, I think he had a roadhouse, and I think we found a picture of him this morning.
I found some pictures early Circle yesterday.
Oh yeah? Where are you? Kind of hard to see. I'll actually get some real pictures made.
Oh, they had donkeys up there that way too, huh?
This was in 1898. It looked like he was working for the U.S. Geophysical Service, mapping the area. So, this was a Circle area, Circle City Party, it said on the back. So anyway, there were a few other Filipino YouTubers back in the day. Do you remember anything about any of those roadhouses, either between Circle and Charlie River, or Charlie River and Circle, or Eagle?
In the direction of Eagle, I don't have any memories at all, but I know, I remember stopping at the Slavin's cabin.
Yeah, at the B place, it's still standing the way it did when you were
He here. Made it strong, yeah, yeah, it sure did.
The Park Service actually refinishing some of the rotting logs they fixed, and it's really nice, and they there last summer. It's a very nice place to stop on the river. Lots of room, and it's a big place.
Yeah, Slavin's was the only place I remember we stopped. I remember we stopped there in 1949 when we were leaving, And I think it was the first time, actually, yeah, it had to be the first time we ever went out to dinner, you know.
So what made your father and mother decide to leave?
Education mostly, yeah.
For the kids.
And I think my father had talked to a marshal, a U.S. marshal, and they said it was a law that we had to be in school, you know, and that was what
made him decide.
Yeah. As far as I understand, you know, from, you know, stories my family were telling.
So where did they go from there? Did they go to Circle?
Yeah, they went to Circle to start with, and my mother lived in a tent for most of that summer, waiting for my father. My father went into Fairbanks to look for work and got a job at the Northern Commercial Company in Fairbanks, I presume through his long association, you know, and
trading
and everything, yeah. He went to work at the power plant when Northern Commercial had the only power plant in Fairbanks.
Did they produce their own power for the store and for the...
Yeah, for the city, yeah.
Yeah,
it was cabins, it's true. Yeah.
So he got a job and then eventually sent for the family?
Yeah, toward the end of the summer, yeah. I think O'Leary, before... Let's see, what was his name? Al O'Leary?
Morris?
Morris O'Leary?
Morris O'Leary.
Morris O'Leary?
He's the one that drove the truck.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, it had to be him. Yeah, he used to bring freight over.
Yep,
Yeah, we rode back on the freight truck, in the back end of the freight truck, from Circle to Fairbanks.
Your dad met you in Fairbanks?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did he have a place then, or did you guys camp out until he found a place?
The first winter we spent in Fairbanks, we lived in a tent. It was one of those military tents, but it was, you know, it was already proven that it could be done, you know, so
yeah.
There was no real...
With your kids, too, that's hard. But, you know, that's what you know.
Yeah.
It's probably a big adventure for you guys to be in the city and who cares if you live to it.
Yeah. When I think back on it, I would have rather stayed in the village, I think.
Yeah.
How old were you when you got to Fairbanks, do you think?
I was about five.
So, boy, what an adventure for a little boy, huh?
Yeah.
A big city like that, see electricity and...
Cars going everywhere.
And then you started school that winter?
Yeah. Actually, I must have been six because I was born in 43 and we moved to Fairbanks in 49, so I must have been 6 years old.
Sixth to 31st grade then, I guess.
Yeah.
Where was the school in those days?
At that time, the only place that was in the school was at where the city hall is located now. It was main school. Do you remember that time?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I went there in 65.
Uh-huh.
14 years old, that was.
Yeah, I think when we first moved to Fairbanks, there was only around 10,000 people in the greater Fairbanks area.
Yeah, and they were spread out,
Yeah, Gaffney, I think there were some blueberry bushes out that way.
That was on the outskirts of town, huh?
Yeah.
So, when you lived on the Charlie River, Albert, do you remember anything about, I know one of the things that's come up was there was quite a few packs of wolves that ravaged the moose in there, along the river. I was just wondering if you remember your parents ever speaking about lots of wolves in the area.
It was so much a part of the natural order of things, you know, that there wasn't, it didn't, you know, as long as the wolves were taking things away from us, you know, we didn't, you know, it wasn't the wolves were the wolves, you know.
Right.
And I do remember clearly at night listening to the wolves, and they must have been everywhere. Because I do recall listening to them, whatever they do, they talk or they sing or whatever, you know.
Yeah. I remember Frank Warren and Ed Galvin used to fly in the winter, maybe in February, you know, kind of getting nice days, and they were tired of being inside. They'd go wolf shooting with her, like when it was legal.
Uh-huh.
They both had little super cups, and they would get a lot of wolves up at the Charlie River. And I remember they said, they don't do it for a hobby. I asked Frank about it one time, and he said, if we hadn't done that, there wouldn't be a moose in the country. There were so many wolves, and that was in the early 70s, that there was hardly any wolves. And he said, well, you know, we just took it upon ourselves. We knew we could sell those wolves again, send them out, get them tanned, and sell them to tourists. And it was just another way to make a buck for them.
Uh-huh.
But, it really did cut down on the wolf population and help with the wolves. Yeah, because boy, there were so many wolves up there. The other thing I remember talking to an elder about is, and I think Charles' grandpa used to, or great grandpa, I'm not sure, used to go sheep hunting on the upper Charlie.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember anything about sheep? As part of your diet, did your mom or dad hunt up that way?
Not that I remember. My father was trapping all the way up to the headwaters.
Yes.
He talked about timberline, which would be as far up the river as the trees grow.
Yeah.
And
that's quite a ways when you're on snowshoes and you're with a dog.
True.
That's a lot of line.
Uh-huh.
To run, and a lot of work.
My father was, since he was white too, he had a dependency on store-bought things quite a bit. You know, a lot of the staples that they used, you know, came from the stores. So sheep hunting up in that area, for people that were living there, it wasn't really that much of an activity, you know, traditional
yeah.
activity.
Yeah, I guess it was a guarantee.
Yeah, my great-grandpa used to come from Medicine. That's up there by several hot springs.
Uh-huh.
And then from there, it's over to the headwaters. That's where you get the sheep. And bring it back. He'd probably try it.
Yeah, really, yeah.
But they got a race up there, you know, people running from Teen Hot Springs to Soap Hot Springs. They make it just a couple of three or four days, those guys. So I figured, if, you know, he was a walker probably, you know, he probably get up there in a couple of days. Yeah, I wouldn't know how he would preserve the meat, you know.
I'm not too sure that it would be, you know, even for the native people.
Yeah, it's kind of an odd. Most people didn't eat go after sheep, but he must have liked it. He must have liked sheep.
Oh, it's tasty.
It's really good.
Yeah.
I think he was a chief.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's what he, you know, he gave like big paws. 6 days during the Christmas and New Year's. That's when everybody came from the outlying areas, and the chief would, you know,
be responsible.
Be responsible for the big potlucks. You all the food.
So he probably went up there when he could just to gather some meat and kind of have a treat maybe for people that like.
Could be, They probably had uses for their skin too.
Yeah,
like that.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So he definitely would have had to stay up there, probably at least a couple of weeks, just to dry everything to be able to carry it back. And who knows? Maybe he had people helping him too. You know, maybe somebody else going with him. You know, we don't have any of that history, but we'll keep looking. Somebody might have wrote down something. So then you kind of grew up in
Fairbanks
area?
Yeah.
And when did your parents pass away, Albert?
My father passed away when he was young. I think I was only about 12 years old when he passed away.
He
had a heart condition.
Oh.
It might even be the same thing that I'm starting to develop.
Wow.
So maybe it's hereditary.
Yeah, could be.
Your mom?
My mother passed away in 1964.
Oh.
My father passed away in 1957. I think it was.
Too long after.
Yeah.
And so who took care of all your kids once you were alive?
I'm not exactly sure.
You were farmed out to different
people? Yeah, just farmed out, but I'm not sure whether that was an agreement between my mother and father. Because my mother didn't really, you know, didn't have the skills to, you know, to live in the city.
And
without my father, she was kind of lost, you know. She didn't have any knowledge of it.
Yeah, when you're from the bush area and you get kind of thrown in there when you're by yourself, it must have been very difficult.
Uh-huh.
Did she go back to the village at all, or did she just stay in Fairbanks?
She thought about going back to the village, and we went over a couple of different times, you know, because she wanted to try to find out whether that was what she wanted to do, you know,
back to Chalkeetic?
Back to Point Yukon, and then we have relatives down in Beaver, too, so we went down to Beaver for part of one summer to, you know, for her to study what was there, and whether she thought that was going to be
good for you kids.
Yeah.
And then you guys just ended up staying in Fairbanks?
Yes. Farmed out from there, though. I went to a boarding school down in Haines.
Mm-hmm.
My younger brother went to a boarding school in Cordova. And my older sister went to Shelton Jackson.
It's hard when everybody gets split.
Yeah.
So you guys were orphaned early, huh?
Pardon?
You guys were orphaned early.
Yeah.
There's stories about, you know, people losing both parents.
It really breaks family unity so much when they were all farmed out, you know. The Crow family, my daughter's traditional family, there was Lucy Crow, had CD, and her husband had died when she had about 8 kids, and then he died of pneumonia. And then those kids, when their mom went to TV asylum, they shipped them all over the place and scattered them. Some were in an orphanage in Fairbanks, some were sent here and there. And it really, you could tell by just the family dynamics how that affected so many Native families. Just the brutality of being separated, not having to be able to depend on each other.
There's still a lot of that happening, too. You know, people.
Yep. It's really hard. And it's a lot of due to alcohol and drugs. Mm-hmm. And all happens a lot. A lot of kids in foster care. It's hard. It's really hard. And there aren't enough traditional Native families to take all these kids.
That's true. And
split up on their families. So after you went to where, you say, Haines?
Haines, yeah.
Oh, and there was a boarding school there?
Yes. It was a Christian, a Presbyterian boarding school. Mm-hmm. My older brother and I both went to the same school, and let's see, until I think it was around 1959 or 1960. It wasn't really that long. By the time I turned 17, I was pretty much on my own.
Yeah. You're a little older than some of the younger kids in your family. Right?
Yeah.
So you left there and did you come back to the interior?
I went back to the interior for a little while, and then my older sister had gotten married, and she was living in Juneau. And I just followed along for a while and went to work down out of Juneau. Mm-hmm. Went to work in the commercial fishing industry. After that, I just kept moving. I haven't stopped yet.
But there's a lot of people that have done that, and that goes back to the family unity being broken too, and never feeling really at home, I think, for some people that, you know, you want to be together with your family, but everybody's split up.
Even today, my brothers and sisters and I aren't really close, you know, like, you know, a phone call once in a while, you know.
So did you try to fight the Park Service for your dad's?
I'm not done yet.
That's great, because don't ever give that up.
Yeah.
There was a traditional home for your family.
Yeah.
And then your sister buried there, so, yeah. You know, I mean, that's, you got five family dynamics, 10 names.
Yeah.
I mean, there's roots in there for you, you know, I mean, that one guy, that Phil Brill.
Yeah.
See, I guess he never did patent that 40-mile land for some reason, so it was a private property. You know, I guess he just kind of,
built it up like a lot of people did. That's kind of like a homestead.
Yeah.
It's kind of his area, you know, that people would kick him out of there. But in those days, doing paperwork was difficult because people had to be able to find a commissioner, record, you know. So it wasn't that easy when you're, especially transportation was hard, you know. They probably would have had to come to Fairbanks to file paperwork on land that was so far away.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the Park Service took over that area now. They took over that building. It originally belonged to Phil Grill. Originally. And then before that, I don't know. You know, but you know, his place went down, and then they built another little place, and then that got flooded, so he built another place.
And Richard Smith
and his brothers built that two-story cabin. It's a nice cabin. I mean,
that's the one that Park Service kind of took over.
They took over, and they told him, you know,
they had no claim to it.
You have no claim to it, but you could use it.
Uh-huh.
A little bit different.
Yeah, I looked for the paperwork on the homestead claim my father made, and as far as I can remember, and then I read the homestead laws, he did everything he was supposed to do, but for some reason the paperwork got lost.
In
the bureaucracy, yeah.
The bureaucracy lost it somewhere.
Yeah.
It never got processed.
That could be, yeah. Yeah, there were stipulations in the Homestead Act that said there was a certain amount of land that had to be put under cultivation, yeah. And I remember that we had a big garden up there too, you know, so.
Yeah.
You know, build a habitable dwelling, put a certain number under cultivation, you know, and the clearing and everything, you know. And
yeah.
He did everything then.
Yeah, according to my memory and my understanding, he did everything, yeah.
Did anybody in your family ever have any pictures that somebody took of your home on the Charlie Road? Do you ever remember? Have you ever seen any?
I'm not sure, but I think my sister has some, yeah.
I'll ask her, because that would be something interesting for us to look at. It'd be nice if we had people if we went up there too to sort of orient, because everything's going to change in not many years. The tree covering.
True.
It's kind of nice to see what it looked like back then.
Yep. My memory of it was, I went in there by canoe one summer about 6 or 7 years ago, 8 years ago. And my memory of it was, you know, I can remember the big, you know, that's not just a little clearing, but we had a big clearing around the house, you know. And, you know, when I went up there by canoe, I was amazed how big those trees get.
You know,
that's a short time, you know.
Yeah.
Can be, yeah.
Yeah. There's some good trees up there.
We probably built, cleared the land, not only because of the homestead insulation, but so your mom could keep eye on your kids and watch for the bears and, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard to let the kids in. You got to be able to see them.
Yeah.
Make sure they don't fall in. And
yeah, it had to be for safety reasons, too, yeah.
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 I wrote down some questions, but I think we've covered most of them. Can you think of anything else? The one thing I wanted to ask you was, were there any other neighbors on the Charlie River that you knew of when you lived there? Like, anybody else live in the area, or was it just your family?
Just the family, yeah. The closest people were down at Slavin's.
Yeah. That's quite the little journey down there. I mean, if your dad went to trade or to do something, I mean, that's not just right next door. It's a little bit,
true.
Especially if it's my dog team. Did you have a big dog team? Did your father have quite a few dogs?
He probably had up to 10 dogs, yeah.
So if he's traveling, he'd take them out with him?
Yeah. He'd also take, down to Coal Creek. I think that was the closest place where, I think there was a post office down there at the mining camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, stuff like that.
Send for stuff, maybe.
Yeah.
Check his mail once in a while, a couple times a winter.
Yeah.
The Sears Roebuck catalog? Did you have the Sears Roebuck catalog?
I think my father had an agreement with a pilot that was flying around there. When he had mail in the post office, the postmaster would fly over like that and throw it out of the airplane.
Oh, so he might get some mail close to Charlie River then and not have to go all the way up there.
Yeah, I think it was more like a gentleman's agreement between my father and the pilot, yeah.
It's probably nice. He probably did something for the pilot along the way. Who knows, you know?
Yeah, may have given him fish or given him something, in trade,
Did your mom sell, beads or for sale to?
She did, yes.
So that was another way to make a little income, probably. And they had the items like moose hide tents. She probably did all that by herself. Sometimes you had extra skin to make stuff and sell, and sometimes you didn't. Depending on how many pair of boots you had to make for your kids.
Yeah, she had that old sewing machine she used to use, She made all of our clothes, and she made, moccasins and everything. But yeah, she did sew beads.
Send stuff
maybe
to the... And a lot of times those migrant wives, they buy stuff for their wives. Mint.
Yeah, I found an old beaded thing from my grandpa's sister-in-law over there at that museum.
Oh, yeah?
A long time ago, yeah. She sold something. I don't know what it was. It was pretty old.
There's a lot of interesting things in the museum to look at. More than a few hours to take it all in.
This is my grandma.